Hello and welcome to another edition of Medical Minds Conversations with Guthrie Experts. Joining me as always is Dr. Corinne Johnston. I'm Steve Ostrhaus, and we're excited to have you here. And the big thing is you're probably all listening to us or watching us on some form of social media. And that's kind of the topic of the day, right? Social media and its health impact.
Yeah. So we all, I think, our age look back and say, well, I didn't have this when I was a kid, right? We didn't have this easy access to so many things at your fingertips, right? Mm-hmm. So today's podcast, we're bringing in one of our pediatric specialists to discuss the impacts on adolescents from social media. And I think that's a battle every parent fights in their mind. When do I let my kid have a phone? When do I let them access things on their iPad? I don't know, Steve, if you've tossed that. Your kiddos are a little bit older.
Yeah, you know, they're a little bit older. I mean, they've both have or had phones. And it is a tough battle. And some of it comes down to, well, you know what? We'll save it. We'll get into that once we bring in our guests. And I think you're going to be able to talk to it a lot too, right? Because I'm sure you see a lot of that too in your own practice. But we'll wait. We'll hold on that conversation.
Joining us today to discuss the impact of social media in our adolescents is Dr. Philip Hefner. Dr. Hefner is a practicing pediatrician and also the chief medical officer of our Guthrie Cortland Hospital. Welcome, Dr. Hefner.
Thank you.
We're just going to jump right in, right, Steve, with the question, what is the global impact, Phil, if you had to say, on our adolescents? Is social media good or bad?
I think it is fundamentally good with a lot of potential pitfalls. I think, you know, in my career, I've seen social media go from being a curiosity with a relatively limited group of people using it to being, you know, part of everybody's or almost everybody's everyday life. So watching, you know, a generation or so of kids grow up without it and then transitioning to sort of having it to now everybody having it, it's really been interesting to see how it impacts people. And I think the main positive is just there's a lot of good things. It's easy to get information, it's easy to learn about things that you're interested in, it's easy to connect with people with common interests and have a lot of positives there. But unfortunately, it can be a really powerful tool to be critical of others and immediately and without necessarily the support to offset that in a time when people are very, very emotionally fragile. They're still kind of figuring out who they are and their emotional intelligence isn't really all there. So that's where as a pediatrician, you know, I definitely have teenage kids and I worry about the impact it has on them. And you know, it's hard to know what to do some of the time.
You know, you bring up a great point, right? Because everyone, it's unfortunately definitely a way that kids can, I guess, bully other kids too. And growing up, I'd always wonder, you know, and I'd ask my kids the same thing. I'm like, you know, when you watch those, I mean, for those of us who are old enough, you watch those 80s films, right? Where you've got the obvious portrayals of bullies and the over-the-top stuff. And I say, you know, does this kind of stuff happen in school? Are you seeing this, actively seeing this? And for the most part, they'll say, no, we don't really see that so much. But I think where social media comes into play is it's not even new anymore, the newer form of bullying. It's how you're getting, you're treating others badly this way instead of right in someone's face.
Yeah, it's never been safer to be a bully than it is now. You're not in the same room with someone. You can enter in and be critical and run away. You can be anonymous or you can be who you are. And you know, it's almost like the bullies have too many tools. But I think as a parent, as a pediatrician, You really have to understand that social media is part of our life. It's going to be part of people's work and the fun things that they do both. And so they have to learn how to manage it. And that's our role, is to help them learn how to manage the time that they spend doing it and the way they feel about the posts and the feedback and the things that they see, and how to sort of filter and understand content, and how to ask questions about what they see with people they trust so that they can get good information to think about and act on. So it's a lot of work. It's created a lot of work. And that I think is the biggest hurdle is finding the time and being organized enough to manage it on a continuous basis.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned too, you know, the time spent on. So I think as a parent, some of the struggle we see there is even screen time, right? Because this counts as screen time. And then when kids are in school, they're now on screens. So how do we, and then we look at recommendations of, you know, an hour, 2 hours a day. How do we balance that?
Yeah, I remember back in the day, so to speak, was it 2008 or so, you know, not so long after the iPhone came out. The American Academy of Pediatrics said, 2 hours a day of screen time. And now here we are, not all that long later, and that seems completely ridiculous. No one would tolerate 2 hours of screen time. And they were saying 2 hours of screen time, all contexts, educational, non-educational, everything. That just couldn't happen now in a reasonable way without really being a restrictive parent who mm-hmm. would be very ridiculed for that. So, you know, I don't know that there's a right number. I think there's a right context. If the amount of time a person, a kid, whoever is spending doing social media is interfering with their relationships in the real world and is interfering with their ability to do their work or their schooling or whatever, or, you know, they're not doing enjoyable activities because they're constantly staring at a device, that's probably where the line is. But you probably have to figure out where the line is just before that, perhaps. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be somewhat individual. I can tell you with my own kids, they're very different about it. You know, one of them is very self-guiding and says, you know, that's enough, I got to go do this. And another one is really has to say, hey, you know, you're probably 4 hours into something here. That's probably enough. Let's do something else. So again, it's, and sadly, a lot of families, you know, communities, they don't have the time to pay attention. They're so busy with just mm-hmm. surviving that the attention slips through the cracks.
I was going to bring that up too. It's kind of a practice what you preach thing too. As a parent, I have to sometimes, you know, say to myself, okay, I've been on my phone too much. You know, if we're all sitting down, quote unquote, as a family, but, you know, and watching TV, but realizing, that's another screen, but realizing that, you know, I look around the room and myself included, we're actually on our phones, you know, and so we're showing, you know, that example that we're unfortunately setting for others.
Yeah, very much. I think, you know, it doesn't work for everyone, but for instance, if you sit down for a meal, you know, it's not enough to put your phone face down on the table because it's going to buzz or it's going to something, it's still going to have your attention. You need to really put it somewhere else. And I think something that we've tried to do as a family is say, you know, your bedroom is sacrosanct. You can't have that device when it's time to go to bed. Your phone is downstairs charging, whatever, but you can't have it in your bedroom, you know? And I think that comes from it, you know, in the good old days again, but I think these are still those days, is it's really not a great thing to have a TV in your bedroom as a kid, because it interferes with your ability to go to sleep. It's just too tempting and that sort of thing. So to me, a telephone, you know, a portable phone just becomes an extension of that. Is if you have something in the room where you're supposed to relax and rest and sleep, and it's a constant temptation, well, you know, you're asking for trouble. So mm-hmm. that's hard for people to do, but it's a place to start.
Yeah. And what's, if you had to say, I mean, I have an example. My daughter was in second grade and she came home and she said, Mom, I watched this today at the end of school. And I said, well, how did you watch that? Oh, my friend Emily's phone. She had her phone. I said, your friend Emily has a phone, a smartphone? Oh yeah, lots of my friends have phones. So my kids don't now. Is it, I know there's some individuality to it, but at what age do we think they have within your borders enough development of their brain that it's okay to say, yeah, we're going to introduce you to this a little bit.
Yeah, I don't know that there is a consensus opinion. I saw a study that came out this last week that suggested 13 was probably the age where having a device, a phone, and this wasn't even necessarily having social media as part of it. This was just having a phone because, of course, you know, I think families say, well, it's a safety issue, you know, or, you know, my kid needs to have a phone because I need to be able to get a hold of them or, you know, and, you know, something that's not pleasant to talk about, but in the context of school shootings and threats and bomb threats, you know, things that are really horrible, but people will say, well, you know, if that comes up in my community, I want to know my kid's okay, you know, or I need them to be able to reach out to me and say something's going on. So there's, but I think, honestly, I see the point, but I think the risks to your child from an uncensored, unmonitored use of phones and social media is greater than not being able to get a hold of them in an emergency at a school or something like that. And that's, I know people would disagree with me, but that's, I think, probably the truth. So, you know, the age has got to be a compromise between what is realistic in your ability. To me, when you can monitor as a parent or as a family member effectively the use of that, then that's probably the time. And that may be a different age for different kids because they mature emotionally at different levels. But I'm definitely going to say second grade's too early.
Yeah.
You know, probably elementary school's too early. Yeah. And yes, you know, you risk your kid being the pariah. Well, I'm the kid who doesn't have the phone. And I'm like, yes, that's right. You know, I'm your parent. I'm not always your best friend.
That's a great point because, you know, the same with, you know, my own kids, you know, I know that my daughter, she's 13 and she does have a smartphone, but I know that there are individuals in her friend group, both that have phones. Well, I'm sorry, they all have phones, but who have greater access to use for a longer period of time than others. And, but that's just accepted. And I imagine it might come down to the friend groups and the emotional intelligence within them too, right? That those individuals are not considered like, oh, they can't use their phone. It's like, oh no, I know that I won't be able to talk to so-and-so after a certain point in time because they don't have as much time left and it's accepted. But again, it's like my mother always used to say, you know, that I turned out to be, well, I think I turned out to be an okay person. but my mother used to say, part of it was parenting, but I really lucked out because you had a really good group of friends. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really important too. And having the understanding that not every child is going to have the same access to a phone or same access to social media and so on and so forth. I think I was more rambling than asking you a question, Dr. Hapner there.
Yeah. I mean, it's always been true that, you know, the right crowd or, you know, your child's friends and things, but social media casts so much broader net. You know, there's a lot more audience, a lot more people who can be critical. So when you get into something like that, it really, just in terms of the exposure that your child has to criticism that can really be harmful to them or in their perception, it's a much bigger audience than, you know, the group of friends that you or I might have grown up with, you know, and that kind of reach. It's just scope. So I think that's a reason. Now there are tools, right? So, you know, when there are things like this, there's opportunities and there are apps, there are controls on the phone of where you can limit, you know, the person's exposure to, you know, their data shuts off at a certain time. You can do that. You know, there are other apps that can monitor, you know, some of them that have some AI functionality that actually will cue on certain words or phrases and alert you. And I actually have something like that. It works pretty well. I'll get sort of a notice and it'll tell me that my child has looked at something appropriate. I can go in and see exactly what it is. And if it's inappropriate, I can contact them and say, hey, you know, that's across the line. Mm-hmm. So open communication with your child about where the boundaries are. These are things that are acceptable. These are things that are not. Having some reasonable way to monitor them that keeps them safe. These are all things that we all are constantly working at and working out. But I do think, like we talked about at the beginning of it, I think on balance, the things that are positive that can come out of social media will outweigh the things that are not, but you have to really monitor for the things that are not.
Yeah. I think that's a good point. We've kind of focused in on the negatives, right, that we see, but what does using the terms, I think we heard having the world at your fingertips, right? Yeah. What does that, how does that augment in a positive way with experience and finding someone like you, self-discovery, that sort of process.
Yeah. And, you know, my sons had been fortunate enough to spend some of the summer halfway around the world, and he's sharing those experiences with his entire family, you know, sending pictures and communications and things. Those aren't something that would have been possible even 20 years ago, really. And it's free, you know, and he can call me and talk to me in real time from the other side of the world on an app, and it's free.
Yeah.
I mean, it's incredible. So there's a lot of upside, but, you know, the pitfalls, the bad news is what sells. And so, you know, there really are some dangers and some pitfalls. And unfortunately, there's a real gender bias. It does seem, especially in early adolescence, to be a much more negative for females than males. And there are well understood reasons for that, but it's hard to course change once somebody gets into a difficult spot.
Yeah. What are some of the clues as a parent, you know, that if our child is kind of stays to themselves or doesn't tend to talk to us, we might see with that in them behaviors we might observe that might point to we need to investigate further?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the clues that would give you some insight that somebody's, you know, being bullied or is sort of talking to inappropriate people or things are some of the same things you would think about if you were looking for depression in somebody. They seem to be withdrawn. They seem to be less expressive. They seem to not have interests in things that would routinely interest them. You know, they loss of appetite, poor sleep, being exhausted, or overeating, you know, compensating by eating too much, you know, and gaining some weight. So there's a lot of parallels between being bullied and being depressed.
Yeah. I laugh because I think of, you know, oftentimes, and you probably hear the same thing, Dr. Hebner, you hear, is there something wrong with my kid or are they just a teenager, right? Sleeping all the time, eating a lot, not eating, you know, it's always a tightrope walk.
Yeah, but I think as a parent, if you have a decent relationship with your kid, you know the difference between sleeping in and, you know, eating junk food and doing things like that. They're still who they are. They don't have those flattening of their affect. They know the loss of personality and range. You know, they still smile and they still joke and they still do those things. And and they have healthy relationships with real people in the real world as opposed to, you know, the oasis.
Well, as a question, I guess, for both of you, as a pediatrician, Dr. Hefner, and as a family medicine physician, Dr. Johnston, do you find that the adults, parents, you know, are opening up more, asking either of you questions about how to help their children, or like, are they open to, maybe they haven't had that conversation with their child, but they're like, maybe if I talk to my doctor to find out what's going on with my son or daughter.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. We definitely have direct questions about it. And, you know, it's interesting, but sometimes you'll walk into a room and people are all on their devices, right? That's something that didn't used to happen. And you almost have to say, hello, excuse me, we're here to talk. And I'll actually say that if it comes up or whatever, I'll say to the parent or guardian, I'll say, do you feel comfortable asking your child to give you their phone? You know, will they willingly just say, okay, here, hand you the phone, like, you know? And if it's a problem, that's a warning sign. You know, you really, if you're so attached to your phone that you feel like you're punishing or it's threatening to your child for you to actually handle the device, or like in the room, is it okay if can you give your mom your phone or can you give your dad your phone? If that's a problem, it's a warning sign.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting. I would agree with Dr. Hefner. And I think it's also interesting from the adult perspective. You know, I find a lot of parents and adults, myself sometimes included in that, you know, if you spend too much time on social media, you almost provoke anxiety, right? Because you hear bad stories or this, and you know that sometimes the advent of they see what you're scrolling, right? And they fill that void with more of what you're scrolling. So I oftentimes will challenge my adults to remove that from their smartphone, right? Take away that ease of access to that, and it can make a big difference, you know, when you're not seeing that. And we see it in our elderly population because they sit around and watch the news all day. And then they end up being some of our most anxious patients because they're always hearing negativity. So I think that reflects all the way down to your kiddos and teaching them how to sit at a table. You know, I think we even see that generationally in the workforce, right? Can you reach out to Tom? Sure, I'll send him a message when Tom is 4 feet away.
Yeah.
So it's that kind of shift too, where we're the old guys and saying, well, why wouldn't you just walk over to Tom? So maintaining those social skills are so important.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and you mentioned the news and the older population. Having worked in the news for more than 20 years, I get that because that was my life for two decades of just constantly. And as much as the push is to tell some good news in there, you're putting a lot of bad news. And what is bad that happened today out there? So, yeah, that's very easy to happen. Dr. Hafner, did you find any impact related to COVID in terms of social media use and growing, I assume, when everyone was at home?
Well, to put it bluntly, I think COVID was an excuse not to parent. and what I mean by that was, you know, the kids are suffering and we're suffering. So, you know, go ahead and do what you're going to do. And I'm not going to worry about guidelines and things like that. It's just, we just have to get through this. I'm not necessarily thinking it was going to be years before that happens. So, and, you know, that's a harsh way of saying it, but I think there were real steps back in ownership by families of media during COVID because people felt trapped. Yeah. And now that we theoretically have emerged from that, there's a new norm in what amount is okay or not okay, what content is okay or not okay. And I don't necessarily think that was a great thing, but I still am optimistic long-term that, you know, social media has more positive than negative. It's just finding the right way to rebalance. And it's like, I don't know, I would say it's sort of like any chronic disease in that you can still improve your long-term outcome, even if you had setbacks for a period of time. If you, you know, you didn't take care of business for this period of time, but you saw the light and now you're okay, I'm going to go in a different direction and recover. So yeah, I think COVID was terrible for boundaries around social media.
Is there anything we haven't asked you yet that you think is really important in terms of messaging to get out there for anybody who might be listening or watching?
Well, I think it's, if you feel like you're losing touch with your child or your family member because of social media or what have you, or, you know, it's making your relationships awkward, things like that, don't be hopeless about it. It's not an unrecoverable situation, but sometimes you do have to be firm. And if you're the parent or the guardian, you have to make up the rules and do what you think is right. And that won't always be popular. That's not different about anything else in parenting. It's just more energized because social media is so stimulating. You know, it just touches those senses in such a strong way.
Yeah. A great example of that locally, Dr. Hafner, we had our school district last year decided that phones could not be, any electronics could not be out during school hours. I think they started at 10 minutes before and 10 minutes after because it had become such a problem in the classroom. And the outcry in the community initially about how dare you do that? That's how I communicate with my child. And it was met with so much negativity. And then they could put it on social media. Right. But it ended up being, I think, a really good thing for teachers and students alike to tuck that away. It's just that reset that you're talking about. It can really be difficult once
And remember, it's not just phones, it's your watch or your laptop. Yeah. So it took one of my kids, I won't say which one, about 10 minutes to route that through their laptop instead of their phone. So, I mean, it was like, I asked him what he thought about it, and he said, it doesn't affect me. I just do what I do on my computer instead.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, okay. Yeah, and I think you do at times have to take some risks as a parent and say, look, we're going to do this for, you know, this day or this weekend or this trip or whatever. Mm-hmm. And we're all going to do this. You know, we're all going to put this aside. And my goal here is to show you how wonderful your life can be for some period of time without this connectivity. And you just are going to have to trust me on it. Mm-hmm. And I don't think too many people would fail in showing that, and then, you know, maybe get a little bit of perspective, but there's some risk in that. You're going to push some buttons if you do that.
Mm-hmm. I think everyone just needs
maybe a day.
Yeah.
I think everyone needs to take a step back and say, all right, I remember the day when we had to get up to change the channel on the TV and stuff like that. So we'll just, we're going to revert back to that.
I was the remote control for my grandma.
Yes. And times were great. All right. Thank you so much, Dr. Hefner, for joining us today. Really appreciate it. Great conversation.
So a lot of great information today from Dr. Hefner about a real gray area in life. And that also translates to medical minds. When, how, and probably the hardest question of how do we have the discussion or the hardest process with our children about the wonderful things that social media can bring to us, that ability to see our grandparents on the screen, mm-hmm. you know, every time when we talk, to some of the pitfalls, which I think we hit on during the podcast. So it sounds like the take home is know your child, know what they're doing, and empower yourself and your child to have that critical conversation about what's okay and what's not when we're using social media platforms.
Open dialogue and communication. Yeah. Yes, probably the answer to a lot of the world's problems.
I agree, Steve.
And if you want some answers to maybe not one of the world's problems, but some answers to some other health problems or issues. No, not yet. It's going to be one heck of a website when we get there, though. It's Guthrie.org/engage, and you can take some health tips and quizzes and hopefully get some tips that'll lead to a healthier lifestyle. But until next week, Dr. Johnston, we'll do it again.